Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Hello, hi, and welcome to Near and Queer to My Heart. I am your host, Amanda G. I'm so happy to be here. This episode, we have New Orleans comedian extraordinaire, Clara Kelly. I really enjoyed this conversation because when we recorded this conversation, and I did not tell Clara this, I and my now wife had picked out rings, and I was planning the proposal and what that would look like and what our future would look like. And so weddings and engagements and all these things were on my mind, and I knew Clara had just gotten engaged. So we spent a lot of time talking about, you know, what that means. And I think through this conversation, it really helped me process a few things and get to the place where I wanted to be. And that's why between recording this and now, not only did I get proposed to, and also did I propose, but we went through and did it. We got married. And when I was editing this, listening back, and just, you know, hearing myself having these conversations with Clara, and I hope you all enjoy it too. So let's get to the episode. Let's get to Clara Kelly. Hey, Clara, how is it going today?
Hi, Amanda. Going well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so proud of myself. I always, every time a guest comes on, I'm like, I want to say, like, how are you? And I feel like that's such a loaded question post-COVID. So I just asked you how it's going, and I don't know if that's better.
I mean, either way, it's just going to be like an generic answer. I'm not going to, like, trauma dump right off the bat.
No, we wait till 10 minutes in before we...
You have to ask more pointed questions to get that information.
Yeah, no, I've known you. How long have you been doing stand-up?
A little under a year and a half.
Yeah, so I've known you that entire time. What was your first set?
Well, so my first set was at Ugly Dog. It was like mid-March. But then like a week or two after is when I did my first set at 12 Mile.
What was your decision to decide to try stand-up comedy? Like I always wonder like what drives us, because it's like, it seems insane. You're like, I'm going to write jokes and then I'm going to get up in front of strangers and I'm going to tell them. And a lot of them are like personal things. And why am I compelled to do this? Yet I can't stop.
Yeah. So I went to go see Tig Notaro live at the Orpheum here in New Orleans. I haven't gone to see a whole lot of live stand-up just in general, but I saw her after listening to like the live album, like when she, you know, broke out. And so seeing her, it was unlike any stand-up that I'd seen before. I was a huge fan of like Don Mulaney and like that stuff on, but I'd never like been to local comedy or anything. So something like just sitting there in the audience sort of clicked, and I was like, oh, maybe this might be for me. So I did a bunch of research before going up, cause I'm a nerd and I was scared. But like right off the bat, everything will tell you, like, you have to just go and do it. So I did.
That's the thing I tell everybody. I'm like, you gotta try it one time. You gotta try karaoke. Mm-hmm. I always recommend to people whether they can sing or not.
I've never done karaoke.
You have to, because it's freeing in a whole it's a whole different type of performance.
Yeah, sure.
And especially if you're not a singer or don't think you're a singer or haven't done that before. I think, so I'm just gonna tell you this. This is a tangent, but I don't even know how to talk about this, but I did a show in Bay St. Louis on Saturday, and my girlfriend's family lives near there. So after the show, we went out and then we took an Uber back to her parents' place, and we get in this Uber and we walk in, and there's a disco ball inside, and the lady has a karaoke setup, and she's like, do you want a beer? And I was like, no. She's like, take a beer. And I was like, okay. And then she handed us each a microphone and was like, pick a song.
Oh my gosh.
And so we did, and we sang karaoke with this disco ball. There's lights everywhere. And we're just like in an Uber going to Pass Christiane, Mississippi from Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. It was the weirdest experience.
That is a very specific type of setup for an Uber driver to have.
Yeah, like who wants that in their car?
I would be terrified, honestly, if I got into, like, my partner would hate that. They are so against karaoke. I would do karaoke with like the right amount of peer pressure, but I don't know that I would do it in the back of an Uber.
Yeah, because it's just us and her.
Right.
Like part of the appeal of public karaoke is the public part of it.
If you say so. I don't know, that seems to be like the word. I guess, like, also the thing about stand up, like, as long as it's strangers in the audience, I can generally, like, that's fine. If it's people that I know, maybe not.
Why is that though?
Well, because with strangers, I feel like I care less about what they think. I generally don't have to see them again. There's like a level of anonymity. It's like telling your secrets to like a girl that you just met in the bathroom because you're both hammered. Like, that's sort of how it is, I feel like.
Yeah, because I feel like other people are more fine with the people they know because they know they're rooting for them. They know they're still going to love them at the end of the day. Or maybe not. I don't
Maybe that's the part that I'm missing. I'm sure they
know.
still would, but I don't know. And you have to spend time with them after, and
Yeah, and sometimes they're like, "Is that true?" And you're like, "Yeah."
Yeah, no.
How so? Ugly Dog is an interesting place to get your start. Ugly Dog Saloon is like a barbecue joint in New Orleans. It is a room that's like half indoors, half outdoors, and a lot of people are there, at least in the times I've been, and don't even realize that comedy's happening.
Oh
So
yes, it's like an ambush. They are hostages.
it seems like an interesting place to start out.
Yeah, I didn't know what I was getting into. I mean, of course. I also don't eat meat, so like having to go to like this barbecue place was just a little bit weird. I was like, this is strange.
It smells so much of meat in that place.
Yeah, it does for sure. But it was a decent night. I mean, of course, Ryan is super friendly to like new comics. It was a fairly friendly room. I got it over with, which is the main thing.
Obviously, you came back, so you felt good
Yes.
about it.
I did not enjoy stand up the first couple times. I really enjoyed writing for the stand up set, but the first couple of times, some people say that they're like hooked from the first time. I was not. I was like, I sort of just like blacked out first couple of times.
But you
But
came
then
back.
eventually, yes, I did, because I knew I had to give it a couple more tries. And then eventually I did start to enjoy it.
Yeah, I was one of the people that like the first time I told a joke that got half a laugh, I was like, what is this magic that I'm feeling?
Oh, so I guess the other thing was like I always was afraid of public speaking, especially like I purposefully put myself through some exposure therapy in high school, but like in elementary school in speech class, I would be nervous like 3 days before a speech. Like it was quite bad. So deciding to do like stand up was so outside of the realm of anything that anyone thought that I was ever going to do, because I was always like labeled the shy kid or whatever. I was always the one like I would be like really sarcastic and tell jokes, but it was always very quiet just to like my immediate surroundings, just like the people that I was around. So there was a definite like it was a clash that I wasn't quite prepared for. I was so mad when I realized that I had to go do stand up and like try an open mic. I was like this I'm so mad that this is what I have. Like, I know I have to go and do it, but I'm so mad about it.
I was also that kid, which it boggles my mind, but I think it's because I have a lovely mother who was very outspoken, and so I didn't have to do that as a kid.
Yes.
And
Did your mom
then,
speak for you as well?
oh, absolutely. She still does sometimes. I mean, I still remember in first grade, I won this like story contest, and part of winning it, you had to tell your story in front of the class. And I
Oh
was like, I
no.
don't want it. I just remember my heart was beating so loud I could like hear it. Like I was worried that I was gonna die because I could hear my heart beating so loud. Like I was so nervous about anytime I talked to more than like two people at the same time, I would freak out.
Or like the popcorn reading, or like going down the line where you're reading out of like the history textbook or whatever. I would like, we would go like sentence by sentence. I would count the people and the sentences and find my sentence and just read it over and over and over again, instead of listening to anyone.
Oh
And
yeah,
then by the time they got to me, I would have read it so many times, I would speak so fast to try to get it out of the way that I would stutter, and that would make me hate speaking even more.
Oh no.
So it's just like this vicious
Yeah,
cycle.
and
It was not a good time.
then now we're just going up in front of strangers multiple times a week, just
Yeah.
telling jokes and chit-chatting. And then part of it too is like chit-chatting with people before the shows, after the
Yeah.
shows. And it's so interesting that I love it now. Like I consider myself an extrovert now, and I would have never.
I'm not quite to that point. But yeah, I do. That was one of the reasons that I did keep coming back, is because I realized that like comedians were just like another group of weirdos. I was like, okay, this actually like fits really well, better than, because I for a while worked as an accountant and that did not fit at all. Those people are so boring.
How did you fall into that? And like, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I mean, this is probably what we're here for.
Yeah.
So I grew up in Southeast Iowa, a small town of like 8,000 to 9,000 people. And I really didn't know like anything about who I was. I was just sort of like doing what I was supposed to do. I went to school in Des Moines and I didn't have a major for like, came in undeclared as like, you're supposed to go to college, but I don't know what I want to study, because I didn't know that what I wanted was important. So I was just like trying to find something that I could stand. I went on a partial saxophone scholarship, but I knew that I didn't want to be a music major because that's just a recipe for disaster. And then second semester freshman year, I took an accounting class. It was quite easy. But everyone else thought it was hard. So I was like, whatever, I'll just, the professor also recruited me pretty hard. So I was like, whatever, I'll be an accounting major. And then I graduated with a degree in accounting.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's not something that it's kind of funny. Boring. I don't know. Yeah, and then I had to work with accountants and that was rough. The schoolwork was fine, but working with accountants was not a good time at all. I did not last very long.
Yeah, I feel like there were not a lot of jokes happening.
Oh gosh, no. I was just like so full of existential angst, like depression. It was a bad time. I just had to go really, that was when I was engaged to a man as well. So basically I had to go like really far in the wrong direction. And then eventually I made like a 180.
Yeah. And we'll put a pin in that because we are going to come back to that. Is that what got you to New Orleans from Iowa? Or is there like, you're just like, I want to go somewhere where they don't even know the word accounting. And you're like, New Orleans.
This does overlap with the queer stuff. So I met my now fiance, Carter, when I was still living in Iowa. And then when the pandemic hit, I moved in to their house. And a couple months later, we knew that this was coming, but they got a job in Michigan. And so we moved out there. We were like in the middle of a hayfield. Like it was the middle of nowhere, which was a great place to be for the pandemic. And that's when I started working at a bakery. And that was great. I had queer coworkers for the first time, which was crazy. I really got along with them. And I was really sad to leave that job because we knew that we weren't going to stay there for very long. And we were there for maybe 8 to 10 months and they got a job in New Orleans. And I was like, hell yeah, I'll go to New Orleans. So now we're here.
Because I always wonder how people end up in
right.
in New Orleans. Like, you know, you're in Iowa, then you
gotta be something.
You go up north to Michigan, and then somehow you end up down in the South. And I also, you know, I tell people this too, because I grew up in California. I went to school in New York, and I never thought I'd end up in the South. I thought like people are born in the South and they stay in the South. I never thought like people come to the South. But then you're in New Orleans and there's so many transplants and so many people from so many walks of life. And it's so cool. But I did not envision that for my life.
Other than like the swamp weather, this is not what I expected from the South. And like maybe some of the food. It's easily my favorite place that I've ever lived. Like,
let's see. Because I know, and you talk about it on stage. You talk about being engaged to a man on stage. And it seems like that was very pivotal point in your life. But how, you were young, right?
Yeah, we started dating when I was a freshman in high school, and then we got engaged when I was a senior in college.
Okay, so y'all were together a long time.
Yes, we were.
And that was just the next step, is that like what everybody was doing?
I knew that I'd always wanted to get married. He certainly was not what I was picturing for my future husband. I also never thought that I was going to marry my high school sweetheart. I thought people who did that were dumb. So it was a bit of cognitive dissonance when I decided to do that, but that like, yeah, it just seemed like the thing to do. Honestly, the other thing is like divorce runs in my family. Like everyone's been divorced at least once, generally twice. So I think I just needed to break off an engagement to get it out of the way. Like that sounds really bad, but like I wasn't able to picture the rest of my life because like every individual day with him was fine. It was good. I wasn't attracted to him. I never particularly was. But every individual day, like we were friends, it was good. But then when I had that ring on my finger and I was finally able to like sort of picture that every day for the rest of my life, I was like, this can't be all life is, right? Like, this isn't how I'm supposed to feel. This is the love of my life. Like, what a letdown.
Yeah, I think too, because like you were in school, you know, when you're in high school, you're not thinking like your future is like college or like that next step.
Right.
And then you're a senior in college and then it's like, oh, now I actually have to think about like, where we're going to live and if we're going to have kids and, you know, what this like actual future, adult future is going to look like. And yeah, if you can't do that, then it's like, hey, let me think about this.
Yeah. And I think it was the same sort of thing with me being an accountant. It was just, I was really looking for safety and stability. And I thought that I could just like fit myself into whatever. Turns out I could not.
Do you still talk to him, or is that like
no.
burn bridge?
I didn't really reach out to his parents at all afterward. They didn't reach out either, I don't think. That was one of the, I really liked his parents, and so that was part of the reason why I was like, I want to be a part of the, no one in their family gets divorced. yeah, no, definitely. Like, I'll see him on Facebook, but yeah, we don't talk at all. I don't talk to most people from Iowa.
I did a comedy festival in Des Moines, and I met some cool people there, but I was just there for like 3 days, and it was like a bunch of comics from like a bunch of different places, so it might have been a different look. But then when I was driving, I did a comedy fest in the Midwest, and I did like a little tour of the Midwest. And then when I drove through Iowa that time, there was a bunch of like farms with silos that said like Hillary should die things like that. And I was like, oh, this is aggressive.
Yep. That's my home state, the one that just tried to rescind gay marriage.
But y'all were the first ones to have it.
Yeah, but it's always been like a quote-unquote swing state. And since Obama was elected, it kept swinging further and further right.
Did you ever do a caucus?
Yes, I did. Yeah, maybe I shouldn't admit this because I probably should have caucused for Bernie, but I caucused for Hillary twice.
Oh, it's a safe space here. I didn't know. I always heard like we always, you know, Iowa caucus. And then I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what a caucus was.
They make it sound way more fun than it is.
Like, it's just a bunch of people in a room shouting. Like, how would you describe it?
Sort of. Yeah, it's a bunch of people in a room, and then you sort of have to like break off into groups, and then they have to count all the people in the groups to see how many are for each delegate, and it takes fucking forever.
But you can like recruit people like to your like...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I didn't really talk to people because that's not really my thing. I'm not going to talk to strangers. I was there. I stood in my spot. I was one of the bodies.
I don't know. I guess I always thought like voting, you know, you go and you vote. And I didn't understand a caucus was like this. My friend's like, yeah, you go in a room and like this corner's Hillary and this corner's Bernie and this corner's the independent. And and everybody's trying to get this person over here. And then at some point,
there's like a threshold to meet to like get another like delegate or whatever.
Yeah. I was like, that's wild that they in 2023, this is still how we're deciding things.
I mean, it makes about as much sense as the rest of it. Like,
well, yeah.
Which is not much.
Yeah, I know. It's like our individual votes. So it's like, do they even count the way we draw?
Not really, because it's...
jurisdictions and...
Yeah, all the gerrymandering, like, it's way easier to, like... I don't know. I don't want to speak on this because I'm not enough of an expert, honestly. Like,
yeah, we don't have to get all political. I was just, like, just literally growing up, not in Iowa, like, you hear the word caucus, and I just had no idea what it was. And then when I was, like,
it 35... It sounds like a party.
Yeah. Someone told me and it like blew my mind.
I suppose it's more fun than voting.
Yeah, and I'm like, this is how we decide things? Like we just yell and scream and then take a head count at the end of the day?
I mean, that does seem sort of like what the founding fathers would have envisioned. Isn't that what they were doing? Like,
yeah. So wild. So I know you said that you always wanted to get married. I'm going to ask, and I've asked this of other guests because for me, like I do believe in marriage and I do want to get married, but like, the idea of the government being involved in my shit has always kind of thrown me off a little bit, where it's like, I do like the idea of committing to somebody and I want to throw a party and I want my friends to buy me gifts that because I bought them all kinds of gifts and flown all over the place to go to their wedding. So like, I want that too. But then the idea of this, like, this government piece always sticks me. And for other people, it's not a thing. Like, I guess, like, you said you always want to be married. Is it just something like you always envisioned for yourself, or is it an institution, if we're going to use that word, that like you believe in? Or is it just like the idea, this like idea of being able to commit to the person you're with in this like extra special way? Or like, what does it mean for you?
I think I always wanted like a partner to do life with. Like the government part, I never really thought about it. I guess I know intellectually that we have to like sign a piece of paper and whatever, but that, and even like, I don't think I ever really pictured my wedding even per se. It was like, cause a lot of people like, oh, dream of a wedding and all that. I didn't particularly, it was more like I just want my person just to be with and know that we're going to just be in this together.
You're already in that. So why, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think there's something about the permanence of it that, because when we got engaged, there was definitely a mindset change because I hadn't really been thinking about the future with, like, it was going great. Like, I enjoy living with them. But there was definitely a mindset shift and it was like, oh, so like this is, I know that they are always going to be here and I am always going to be here. Like, this is a constant now. This is a constant variable. So like, if I decide to like, if I need to move for stand-up or something, like that's going to be one of the main factors is like, we're in this together.
Okay. So that takes you from the I to like the we.
Yeah.
Okay. Cause I've bought a house with two different exes. So right. I feel like I'm like, you could just do that.
Yeah. And we did, we have bought a house together. And even after that, it wasn't like when we bought the house, this is probably because they're a bit older than me. I wanted to know exactly what was going to happen if we split what I was going to get. I wanted to make sure that I had like a safety net in place, like some security. But now I'm like, okay, we're like in this together forever. Cool. I don't know. Maybe that's some like cishet residual conditioning that I have. And it's, I think it's sort of strange that I would even like want to get, like, believe so much in marriage given everyone in my family is divorced.
Yeah, given what she said earlier, is you're like, I might as well get the first one out of the way.
Yes. I don't know. Maybe it's like, it's probably like a bit of naivete as well, but I'm like, yeah, maybe we can do, maybe we'll make it.
Yeah. No, like I said, I'm all in for all, like, I do, and I try, and I do have that, like, cishet kind of thing of, like, do I want this because this is what society has told me I want, mm-hmm. and I want to fight against that, but I also, like, want a wedding, and I want to propose, and I want to be proposed to, and I want a honeymoon, and I want, I'm going to wear a tux, but, like, I want all the things, you know?
Yeah, so I think part of what helped is, like, we didn't do any of the stuff in the traditional, like, I don't know if I've been able to bring this to 12 mile because it's sort of a longer bit, but our engagement, it was more like, so we were just sitting on the couch watching Married at First Sight.
Classic which, television.
Yeah, it's, I love all those like dumb shows like that. And Carter was sitting there watching with me, pretending not to like it, but they actually do. And they just go, well, if those idiots can get married, and then that was basically the point where we decided to get engaged. Like that was... It wasn't a proposal. We didn't have like rings picked out. We just like sort of realized that, oh, this actually makes a lot of sense for us.
Yeah. For people who have been together, already made a commitment and have seen each other more than one time.
Yeah, for sure. Like we've already sort of been over. I've been through a lot of changes in my 20s, which is generally what 20s are for. But it seemed like I've been through, I think, more drastic changes than a lot of people, as far as I understand it. And they've been there through all of that. And they haven't changed as much because they're like, they're now like 40. So, you know. Change generally slows down a bit, but I felt sort of secure in knowing that they've seen all of those parts of me and that we've made it through all those changes. So like, I think it really bodes well for the future that we can handle change together.
Yeah. I always think, you know, it's good to have, when you really know is when you have your like first big fight and you see how you fight essentially, like not just, and not necessarily how you fight, like just how you communicate, because it comes out in those moments in like such a raw way.
Yeah, we've certainly had those rough moments and we still like have them because it's hard to tell sometimes when the other person is triggered. And like, so sometimes there will be like that disconnect or like those moments where you're like, don't really know what's going on. Like, just why are they being mean? But generally, I can always come back to the place where I know that I love them and I want to be with them, and then everything else can work itself out from there.
Are y'all planning a wedding?
So we are, I guess, planning an elopement. We're going to New Zealand in February. Ooh. So they did their PhD in Wellington. So they lived there for like 6 years or something.
Guessing that's in New Zealand, but I'm not good at maps.
It's somewhere over there. So one of their friends is getting married, and it's a friend that they'd always said that if they ever got married, they wanted that person to officiate. And so when we were planning this trip, I was like, hey, since we're already going to be over there, you want to just like get married? And so now we're getting married over there. And then it's an easy honeymoon because we're already in New Zealand.
Yeah, well, that'll be fun. How's your family feeling about everything? Like, I'll back up a little bit because this is and we've kind of answered part of this, but this is the one question that I do ask everybody that comes on this podcast, and it's the coming out question, but I like to ask it in like a different way, because coming out's like layers, right? Like you don't just come out in this one moment like they do on TV, and you know, we have music playing behind us and a disco ball, and it's all and it's all good. You know, it's coming out in layers is kind of how I look at it. So I like to ask, like, when did you first come out to yourself? When did you come out to like friends and family? And then if it's relevant, which for you, I don't think it is. I think you were pretty much out on stage. But when did you come out, you know, on stage or in your, you know, stage persona? Because for other folks, that was a journey. But I feel like you were always out on stage.
Yeah. Had some jokes in there about it. I mean, I look the way I look. So it's and it tends, I mean, you know, this is tends to be an easier punchline to like put people at ease, because they're like, you see you and you're like, what's going on there? Something not normal.
Yeah, well, that's why so many comics, like, the first thing they do is get on stage and acknowledge, and this is what you're supposed to do, acknowledge what they look like. Like, if they're really tall, if they're really short, if they're, you know, have long hair or dreads or whatever it is, it's like you just want to acknowledge what people, what you think people are seeing, because it does make them feel more comfortable and it makes them trust you.
Yeah. So to answer your question, I first came out to myself, I was engaged. I must have been 22. It was probably one of the most boring ways to realize that I was gay. So I was surfing on Twitter and I happened to come across this document. I feel like you've probably heard of it. The Am I a Lesbian Master Doc. And I started reading that. And so my attraction had been just in general suppressed for quite a while. I knew that I was like bisexual, but I'd never really acted on it because I'd been with this guy for, what, 8 years. But then I started reading through this and some of the signs that weren't attraction related. I mean, some of them that were, but like, it was very relatable, concerningly relatable. So I kept reading. I read the whole thing. It's pretty freaking long. And then
I've skimmed. I have not gone through it, but I
Because it was like, this was like a moment for, I think I was in a hotel room on a some business trip for this accounting firm that I was working for. And then I sent it to my friend. I was like, hey, is it just me or is this like crazy relatable? And she was like, no, I don't relate to it, but I can see how you would relate to it. And I was like, oh no. So pretty soon after that, I did break off my engagement and move out. I came out to like a couple of friends that were like in the area, but I've lived apart from my family since I was 18. I think I came back to live in my hometown after my freshman year of college, and that was the last time that I lived there. And so I didn't come out to any of my family until after I started seeing my now fiance. Because I don't know, it sort of felt like I didn't really have a reason to. So I'm just like, we'll burn that bridge when we get to it.
I always say, because I think it is kind of like more of a lesbian stereotype, because I did that. Like, I got a girlfriend and then I didn't, because for me, it was like, it was so much easier to say, like, I have a girlfriend than for me to say, like, I'm gay at the time. I mean, I was 23 and it was still figuring things out. But, and you also, like, for me, it was like the safety net. Like, I have this person that, like, if everyone in my life decides to abandon me and thinks I'm going to hell, then I at least already have this like support built in. Like, it was kind of like a backup plan for like not having anybody in my life kind of thing. But I think about that a lot where it's like, I wish I could have been strong enough for me to like do it on my own terms. But for me, that's what gave me the strength, was like being with somebody and knowing like for sure, like this is who I am. And this feels so much different than like anytime I tried to date a dude.
So different.
Yeah, because you spend like all your teen years, it's like I spent hours on the phone and passing notes in school and just talking about this crush and that crush of my friend. We talked about dudes all the fucking time. And I would do it because I wanted to have friends and
It's part like a social society thing.
And not be like a weirdo in high, like there's enough stuff that makes you weird in high school. So I would just like get on board with this, but I didn't feel it and I didn't understand it. And when my friends would go so gaga and they do the craziest shit for these dudes that it seemed like the dudes could care less sometimes. And
my friend like slept in a car one night, like outside.
Yeah. There's a lot of stalking. Teenage girls are real good at stalking.
I've done my fair share of Facebook stalking.
I've never slept outside someone's house, though.
Oh, God, no, not that level.
Yeah, no, like one of my friends, she bought a car that had like this really cool engine in it that like all the guys wanted to borrow and like race and whatever. And she says she did it because she likes cars, but like, you know, who knows? But anyway, one of the dudes she had a crush on, he definitely crashed her car.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and her dad was not happy.
Yeah. Oh,
because she wasn't supposed to let anybody drive it because her dad was like, if we're gonna get this car. But of course all the dudes wanted to drive it, and she wanted to hang out with them, and I just didn't understand it. I was like, you have the coolest car in the world, like, why let this guy drive it? But then I understand. I started dating women. I was like, oh,
I've let you crash my car.
Yeah, I was like, here's the keys, like, I'll never drive it again. You could just have it, you know.
Yeah, the way that I came out to actually a lot of people was just showing them a picture of the person that I was seeing. That was honestly the easiest way for me to do it. I was like, hey, here's the person that I'm dating, obviously queer.
So you kind of did this. Yeah, we kind of did the same thing.
Yeah,
it's like, I have a girlfriend. I was like, that's what I would just like, I have something to tell you, I have a girlfriend. I remember saying that to people and not saying like, I am gay.
Yeah, because once you say I have a girlfriend, the rest is like, oh.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's different because you're younger than me, you know, like I came out at I'm 40 now, I came out at 23, so that would have, I'm not gonna, that would, I don't know, 2006 we're looking at, like Facebook had just really started. That's when, like, Facebook, you could only be on it if you went to school and you used your school email. Like, it was a it was a very different time. So, and I don't know, some people now are like, it's easier now, and some people are like, it's harder now because the country is, like, so much more polarized in some ways, but there's also, like, so much more queer visibility now than there was when I was younger.
Well, and the thing about growing up in, like, such a small town in Iowa is that there, I did not know any queer women. I knew of, like, one or two gay guys. My mom did ballet, so that was one. And then there was one guy at our school who, you know, had all the stereotypes going on. Even he dated a woman. But I did not meet a queer woman until I was in college. And that's part of what cracked my gay egg was this professor that I got a little bit obsessed with. I would have totally let her crash my car.
Slept outside her house.
Yes. And that's what I was like, oh, I'm definitely bisexual. And then eventually I had to be like, oh, I'm really not into dudes, like, at all.
Yeah. And everyone's coming out is different. And it's however you want to do it and whatever makes you feel comfortable. And it's easy for me to now be like, oh, if I went back in time, I'd be like, I'm gay, fuck you. But, like, I didn't do that because at the time I wasn't ready.
Yeah. I mean, same. I wish I could have gotten that, like, college experience of being actually gay. But to be fair, I think I learned a lot more in college than I would have because I was in a long distance relationship with this dude. So I, like, knew that I had a boyfriend, but I didn't have to spend that much time with him, but I could still, like, brush off all the other guys.
When I was in high school, at least in college, I was not out loud, but at least internally, like, open to the idea of an attraction to another woman.
Mm-hmm.
But in high school, if I even thought a thought, I would fight it. I would be like, no. And so, like, I had no space in my life for that. So I was like, I'm just going to focus on my studies because I wanted to get out of my hometown and my family didn't have money. So the way you do that is you get good grades and get out that way. And so I was like, oh, I'm just focused on my studies. I don't have time for boys. But when I really think back to, like, moments of, like, there were attractions and there were these, like, feelings that I had, I repressed the fuck out of them.
Mm-hmm. See, I always thought of them as friendship crushes. I always thought that what I now know is, like, oh, I was actually, like, into that girl. It's just like, oh, I really want to be her friend. I really want to spend time with her.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, I did. And sometimes I was able to. A lot of the times I wasn't, but I would still, like, you know, you just, like, look at someone, you're like, oh, your face is just great.
Yeah. I remember one time I was at my friend's place. We were, like, just sitting on her bed going through a magazine or something. And I remember I had this thought of, like, I really want to kiss her right now. And then the next thought was, like, what the fuck is wrong with you? So don't think that. That's weird. And then I just, like, put it away. It was all there. I put it away so deep and so buried. And then when it came out, it was like, I was like, oh my God. It was like one of those flashback moments in the
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, like, oh, so many things make sense now.
Yeah, they realize that this person's actually, like, the murderer or whatever. You know, in the movies when it's all pieces together, it's like, it was like that.
Like the strings on the board. You're like,
yeah.
Conspiracy theory.
Yeah. Also, I don't know about you, and maybe you, obviously your fiance was probably surprised, but, like, most people in my life were not surprised.
See, I don't know if they were surprised, since I mostly just came out via text, because this is, most of my coming out was, like, beginning of pandemic. I didn't really have a chance to be, like, out and queer, because I came out only a couple months before the pandemic hit. They didn't seem like, they were, like, generally supportive, which is what I was expecting. Like, I don't come from a conservative family. There was never, like, open homophobia. It's more like the just thing where you just don't see it, the lack of representation. Yeah, but I do definitely wonder. And, like, my partner has seen pictures of me in high school, And they look at them and they're like, "You're very clearly gay." I'm like, "I don't know how you, I don't know what you're seeing, but I'll take your word for it. Like, you're not wrong."
What made them say that? I look at pictures of me and I could tell that I was trying to be girly in a way that like it was not authentic. Like I can see the awkwardness.
I think that's sort of what they were seeing. Just like uncomfortable in my own skin, which I totally was, but I always thought that that was for other reasons.
I'll ask this because this is something my dad has fussed at me about, where he's just like, "When are you gonna stop talking about being gay on stage? It's all you talk about." And he's like, "I'm not saying you can't talk about it on stage. I'm just saying like maybe talk about something else, because like all of the jokes, whether they're about being queer or not, include generally, not all, but I'd say most include some piece of queerness to them." And I think it's part of it is like being in the closet so long and not being able to verbalize that, that now that I do something where I verbalize a lot, that like I want to include that. But part of it is like I don't control what I can't just, I can't, the way I write comedy, I can't just be like, "I'm gonna write a joke about pillows today." And then write about pillows, like I just get a thought in my head and I kind of build on that, and it's like whatever comes into my head. Usually it's like when I'm driving or like doing the dishes or like doing some sort of like other task where my brain kind of like clicks into like just thoughts, and then I take those thoughts and I build them into a set. And queerness is generally a part of it. You've heard my stuff. And part of it, I think, is like I said, I think it's important to have that visibility. I think it's an important part of who I am that I couldn't verbalize. But then part of it is like that's just how the writing kind of happens for me. Do you feel that? Do you intentionally include or try to deviate from or?
Sometimes I intentionally do like include some queer bits. There was a while where I was like, that was basically my whole set. I feel like that's something that I just had to do. This is the case with a lot of my jokes, but eventually I just get bored of them. And I even had a dream at one point when I had been doing that set for a while where I just realized that I was so bored of telling queer jokes. Like, and so like sometimes I'll have like little inclusions of gay stuff. So what I've been doing recently and what I'm going to be bringing tonight to 12 Mile is I finally sort of cracked through. So with all the stuff that's happening with trans people right now, like all the hate that's going around, all the transphobia, all the rights that are being taken away, all the murders and suicides, like it's a super scary time. And I'll have to double check with them that this is okay. But my fiance is trans, and so for a while when all that stuff is going down in Florida, I couldn't write about it at all. Like, I knew that it was important to talk about, but I just didn't have an angle. I was just like sad. But when I was in San Diego in June, my uncle, who's just so into Elon Musk, something about that like cracked through, and suddenly I was able to write about it. And so that's not directly because I'm not trans, as far as I know. I pretty heavily interrogated that because, you know, once you come out as gay, it's like the next thing is gender, and you have to be like, am I a or am I just weird?
Yeah, no, it's a definitely a piece you have to like figure out.
But yes, as far as I know, I am woman. But I like it's been really, I'm really like grateful to be able to finally talk about this now and bring it to the stage. And so that's, it's not exactly talking about my queerness, but it's still talking about the community in general. And I feel like I'm saying something more important than like, oh, I'm gay, look at my hair, isn't it silly?
Yeah, no, because I was trying to write a bit about these like this bullshit with the libraries, because the library in St. Tammany Parish, they're reviewing 500 different books, and they're reviewing like one book a week, and they're having a meeting once a week to discuss why this specific book shouldn't be in their library. And I was trying to write a bit about it, but it just was like this angry like diatribe about how fucked up it is,
Yeah, it's like fascism 101. Like when you start banning books, like those are the bad guys. Like that's.
Yeah, well, I was just like, if you have to Google how to get to the library so that you can go to the fucking meeting to go fight the goddamn book that you don't want your kid to read, even though you don't have never took them to the library
Yeah, you've never
and you
been
don't
to
have
the
a
library in
library
your life.
card, yeah, then like what are we even doing? But it just sounded angry. Like I
Yeah.
wasn't able to like find that funny. So
I think there is something there, but like it might take a bit to get there.
yeah, so I do understand that struggle of like I do have something to say, and maybe if it's not even my experience, it might be something I feel strongly about, or I have friends or loved ones that are dealing with it, and I want to bring it to the, like, we have a platform and we
Yeah,
are able to
exactly.
reach people in a cool way. Like I've had people come up to me after this set and tell me about, "Oh, my brother came out and this is what our family did, and I'm so glad like you're out here doing this, because my child is queer and they don't, like they're scared to express it. And I just want them to know that they're loved and they have role models. Like you get a lot of that stuff. That's so great. And that's why it is important to continue doing it. But it's also, you know, we can use it to stick up for other folks or to make points about like how ridiculous, like look at, especially, you're gonna get me on this platform, like, especially in Louisiana, like shit is like, we're like the worst in education and poverty.
Yeah. Like no one's reading books in the first place. You're going to ban some of them.
And that's what our legislation's focused on. Whereas like we have an increasing homeless population and people that can't afford rent and food and you know, necessities. It's like, let's put our time and effort into that. No, we're going to do a don't say gay bill, or we're going to tell girls they can't talk about their fucking periods or like what, like it boggles my mind at how idiotic it is, but you can't just say that because I sound very condescending. I know that.
Well, that's what I'm like trying to highlight with my jokes. Like you'll hear them tonight, but it's sort of like highlighting the point that I'm hammering right now and getting at is like the whole trans people are crimes against nature. And I'm like, have you met nature? Like it's fucking weird. And so like what I really like jokes that'll like sort of flip your way of thinking. And so that's sort of like, I'm trying to just highlight the ridiculousness of all that. Like none of it is logically consistent. It's all just like they need someone to hate, and this is such a small group that doesn't have enough people to speak up for them. And like, if people think they're going to stop with trans people, like, absolutely not. Like, we're next for sure.
Oh yeah, and everybody is next. You know, women aren't safe. I mean, we already know that. Yeah. Minorities of any kind aren't safe. Mm-hmm. Even cis white men, like if you're. It was the same, like, even, like, if you look at history, it's, like, it wasn't even just, like, white men that were the only people that could vote. It was landowning white men.
Yes.
Like, there's always going to be these, like, extra categorizations that are going to make it, like, a smaller and smaller pool.
Yeah. Of, like, it wasn't just, like, Germans. Like, you had to have blue eyes, blonde hair.
And have generation, yeah.
Like, just get more and more specific.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, yeah, we're not going to end this on a sour note, but I understand what you're saying. I'm glad you're able to find something funny in a serious thing because I'm struggling with that and I've struggled with that many a time.
Yeah. I mean, this took me months to get at, like, trust me, I get it.
Yeah. I do think there's, you know, some comedians that do such a great, like, I think Margaret Cho always does such a great job of like moving back and forth between the funny and the serious. Like she'll tell a serious joke about like a friend that passed away from HIV, and then she'll immediately make a joke and get you like back in, but also like have made her point and have it be like something that sticks with you, you know?
Yeah, and that's like generally my goal.
Yes.
Like how Hannah Gadsby says that like with stories and like laughter is the sugar that sweetens the bitter medicine.
Yeah. And Hannah Gadsby is a great example of that. Mm-hmm. And also, like, flipping the script on, like, how we even look at, like, what is a comedy special? Like, is this a comedy special? Is this stand-up? What does that look like? Like, like Hannah has done a really great job of bringing that to the cultural overall conversation.
Yeah.
I'll ask you this one question. This will be the last one, because hopefully this will wrap it all up nicely, tie it with a bow, and leave it on a positive note, not just me being angry about the ridiculousness of the world. Like, what are your goals for comedy? Like, I know you were compelled to do it. You were compelled to keep doing it. Now you've been doing it about a year and a half. Like, what do you hope? Ideal, best case scenario? Like if you could decide what your comedy career holds, like, what does that look like for you?
So far I haven't really like focused on what, like, I'm not going to say that I want a Netflix special or whatever. Like right now I'm really focused on, I just want to be funny and then hopefully make people think in a way that they haven't thought about something before. Like that's really important to me. I guess the best case scenario, it would be cool to like work on a cartoon at some point. Those have always been my favorite to watch just personally. And you can see it in my Instagram and like how like I basically never post videos. Like I'm not looking to get famous. I'm looking to get good.
That's what you should be doing. Everyone should be looking to get good first, because then the other things will come because, you know, you have the skill sets to back it up.
Right. Like I'm still very aware that I'm a year and a half into it, but I'm still in comedy years. That's pretty young.
Yes.
Everyone recording specials. So new, like that's a fairly recent phenomenon. I try to always keep that in my mind because I'm still in the growing pains phase, even if my stuff's landing better than other people who've been doing it longer. Like it doesn't mean that I'm still not new.
Yeah, when I first started comedy, my dad, who he was a comedy writer, so he could speak to this a little bit, but he said, "You're not gonna have a good joke until you're 5 years in." And he said, "Not that you won't write a good joke, you're not gonna be able to tell it, you're not gonna have the stage prep. Like, it's gonna take you 5 years." And at first, I was like, "Fuck you, dude! I'm not gonna wait 5 years. Like, I already get laughs." But when something happens, when you hit that 5th year, there's like an ease or something that happens on stage that he was right. He was right. And I didn't record my first special, I guess, till I was 7 years in.
That seems way more reasonable.
It was a half hour. I was like, I can't do an hour. Like, it's just,
That's so much stamina, too.
yeah. I had my jokes written out on two different papers on different sides of the stage in case I forgot where I was. But I think it's hard too on the professionals that have to do like an hour special every year. Like, that's hard to have like good
Yeah.
solid material.
I don't know that I would ever be willing to do that because I don't know that I would ever. Oh gosh, like I watched the. I don't know what she did to prepare for it, but. I watched the like the newer Ellen special. Hated it. It seemed like
Does she have like a new one, or is this like the one from a few years
one
ago?
from a few years ago.
Okay. Yeah, I hated
Where's
that one too.
yeah.
Because the first 10 minutes, I was actually just talking with my girlfriend about this because I was upset about it all over again, even though like my girlfriend hadn't seen it and had no idea what I was talking about. But it's like that first 10 minutes, she just spends like telling you how rich she is.
Yeah. None of the jokes were like I know that it's impossible for her to get an unbiased audience because everyone knows who she is and it's easy to get a special that like you get a ton of laughs on everything but that doesn't mean that it's funny it just means that you have a bunch of people in the audience on your side.
Yeah. I did cry at the end though when they did the Q&A. I don't know if you made it that far
Maybe not.
because Laura Dern was in the audience and Laura Dern played her on the Ellen show when she came out and got canceled and all that happened. Like Laura Dern played her partner on the show, and Laura Dern, who was just played her partner on the, she said, "I didn't get work for 3 years." And Oprah played her, like they had a therapist sequence in it, and Oprah was the therapist, and Oprah said she never got more hate mail in her entire career than she got from being on the Ellen show. This was not a stand-up, it was like the aftermath of everything, and people were asking questions and Laura Dern was in the audience, and it was like such a cool, touching thing. So I love
Yeah, that
that.
like that seems like important
But
information and like a really good, but that's not
yeah, so maybe skip the rest of the show just to watch
skip the
that.
actual stand-up part in
Yeah.
the
But even like Amy Schumer's most recent special, which just got released, she had the first joke
right.
she tells is the joke she told 15 years ago.
I've never really watched her stuff. I don't watch a lot, honestly.
Yeah, I was part of my research before I started. I spent 6 months. All I did was listen to queer and female identified comedians. I would listen at work on Spotify. I would watch their specials. I would go to all the local open mics. The mics I saw, like, whoever was performing, but I thought like females have a different voice and queer comics have a different voice
Yeah.
than the straight cis white males do. And I really wanted to like to tap into that. So I used to listen to Amy Schumer's old stuff, like before she was like famous kind of stuff. And the fact that she's now super famous and going back and pulling those bits means that she didn't have an hour and they were pushing her to do an hour. And I don't ever want to get to that place, you know? Like, I want to do comedy
Right,
because
like you
I
want to
love
be
it.
ready for it. Yeah. You want to put out like a good thing that you're proud of.
Yeah. And I was a little disappointed by that. But I kept telling people that, and everyone's like, "Well, I hadn't heard it before." And I was like, "I understand that. Maybe I'm
I
a."
guess that makes sense. Like no one would have else would have heard it probably because like
Yeah.
anyone else who hasn't done a
It was
deep
this like
dive, but
audio record, because it was this audio recording she released called Cutting. It was from forever ago, and it was, I think it was, she released it before she was on like Last Comic Standing, and she got all big, so like other people hadn't listened to it, but it's on Spotify, you can listen to it now. I do like at the end of that special, the last joke, she just says, "I'm gonna leave you with this," and then she says, "My sister cuts herself," and then she walks off stage. And it's so fucked up, but it's so fun, like I don't know. It's so
I
funny
that
to
is
me.
I there's something about that I do really like.
I thought you would, because you like those kind of like awkward
Yeah, like
moments.
it's messed up and it's not even a punchline, but the fact that it's not a punchline is the punchline,
Yeah, and then
like.
that's how she walks away. Like she just
Yeah.
leaves.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
I like that's gutsy too.
It, yeah. Some of her old stuff is super racist and offensive and gutsy in that way. But she was emulating the dudes at the time that were doing this, and that, you know, at the time that's she was a New York comic, and in New York it was very much like the Lisa Lampanelli kind of like, oh, you're this, like we're gonna make fun of this. So she's grown a lot from that. And I think her growing, her last special when she was pregnant was like fantastic. It's just this new one. I just thought she wasn't ready. And I was like, I hope I'm never at a place where comedy is like being forced upon me. Like, you have to produce this by this date.
Well, because if you're not having fun with it, how is the audience supposed to?
Yeah. And why am I doing it? Like, I do it because I love it. Like, I know everyone, not everyone, but some people are just like, you know, you run an open mic, that must be terrible every week. And I'm like, I fucking love it. I love comedy so much. I
I'm
love
glad you do.
being there. I love getting up in between. I like introducing people. I like, after they get off stage, roasting them a little bit sometimes, or just, you know, I just love every part of it. And until I don't love it, then when I don't love it, I'll stop doing it. But I absolutely love it.
Yeah, that has to be first.
And I'm excited to. To I'm excited to see your set tonight.
Well, yeah, I'm excited to go and do it. And I
Yeah.
love, like, there'll be times when I'm like maybe doing too many mics, or maybe like the material just isn't something I'm like passionate about. But I love when I'm genuinely excited to go to an open mic and like bring the jokes out that
Yeah.
I've been working on.
Oh yeah, testing a new joke or working on a new joke. Oh, I love every part of it. It's so exciting. Well, thanks so much for doing an episode of Near and Queer to My Heart. Can you just let folks know if you want to? Because I know you just said like you don't post a lot on social media, but if you know, if folks want to interact with you, let them know where they can find you.
Yeah, sometimes I will post about the shows that I'm doing. My Instagram is Sad House Cats, spelled exactly like how it sounds.
Why sad? There's no sad house
Yes.
cats.
Well, so I actually created that Instagram handle and Twitter handle long before I started doing comedy. It just
Yeah,
happened to work.
I was like, but all the house cats are happy. They're the lucky ones.
I don't know. My house cat is on antidepressants, so
Oh. But does he
she was
see?
peeing on the walls.
Okay, I was like, but does your cat see the outside cats?
No.
Take your cat for a walk.
Yeah, we should. But then she tries so much harder. I don't know. This is a constant, not constant. This is a thing with my partner. 'Cause like having cats outside does it can like affect the wildlife and all that. Anyway, I just don't like to argue with them.
No, you can't. When it comes to cat lovers, you're gonna lose.
Yeah, I had to just pick my battles with that
Yeah,
one. And I was like, she seems okay.
I'll tell you
Give her plenty
as
of love.
someone who's very much a cat lover, there's no logic, even if it's a logical argument, I don't want to hear
I respect that.
it. All right, thanks so much for doing the
Yeah,
podcast.
thank you.
All
I'll see
right.
you soon.
Yeah. Thank you to our guest, Clara Kelly, for sharing her world with you. Special thank you to Ryan Golub for our theme music. Social media with us. You can find us on, I guess it's called X now, formerly Twitter at Queer to My Heart, Instagram and Facebook at Near and Queer to My Heart. And if you feel like it, go on Apple Podcasts, throw us a 5-star review. Please, please, please. And thank you, thank you, thank you. And we'll see y'all for the next episode. Thank you.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.